Pursuits of God podcast. I am your host, Emily Cobb. Today I'm very fortunate to be joined by Christine Dillon, who is an Australian living in Taiwan. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you very much.
Are you able to tell us a little bit about who you are?
I am an Australian, but I actually grew up in Asia because my parents were OMF missionaries in Taiwan. So all the way till I was 17, I lived in Malaysia and the Philippines for school and in Taiwan. And then I came back to Australia to do my HSC and university and work. So I did eventually become an Australian, but it wasn't really till I was 17. And in southern Taiwan, I'm a church planter. And that just means going out and getting to know people, talking to them, and then starting to tell stories about from the Bible, and then seeing their level of interest and just keeping on going from that. So it's a great job. Love doing it.
Wow. And can you tell us a little bit, with such a interesting history or upbringing, how you came to know Jesus?
Okay, so it's pretty hard to avoid it when your parents are missionaries, but one particular school holidays, I came back and we would have a two-month holiday, and usually I was angelic the first couple of weeks and then deteriorated. And about week six of that holidays, I must have done something and was feeling miserable. And Mum and I were doing the dishes, and Mum just said, "Does your heart feel like this dirty plate?" And she popped it in the water, swirled it clean, and then held it up and said, "Jesus can wash your heart clean and give you a new start. Would you like that?" And so I became a Christian at the kitchen sink. Wow. At the age of seven.
Wow, seven. I was about seven too, so there you go. A bit of a similarity there. It's amazing the impact that mothers can have on their lives and taking that kind of opportunity. Now, since then, you have gone on to write a number of books, and your latest book is actually a fiction book, Grace in Strange Disguise, which has just been released. Can you tell us a little bit about this book?
Well, I'm a fairly reluctant writer at all, so the nonfiction I sort of wrote because in the end it saved me time to write things down. So that wasn't really intentional, and I wasn't one of those people that wanted to write from a young age. Mm-hmm. The novel, I was actually having a prayer day about ministry things, and two ideas for novels dropped into my head. And I sort of said, "No, thank you, Lord, I don't want to write." Mm-hmm. "But if that really is you, you're going to have to force me to do it, and you're going to have to give me the resources." So it took, I think, almost 10 years from the original idea, and then 6 years really before I started writing. Got the pressure in my heart just got bigger and bigger. So, it was a bit of a surprise to me to write a novel. And, yeah, it took me about 4.5 years to write this first one because I needed to learn how to write fiction, which is totally different to nonfiction. Mm-hmm.
The book follows physiotherapist Esther McDonald, who's an Australian, and her life seems to be perfect to begin with. Can you explain a little bit about that for us?
Well, the family that she grew up in, she's an only daughter, and her parents run a very big and famous church, which is not a real church, but her dad has always told her, "If you trust in Jesus, everything, you'll be blessed. Everything will be smooth." And she always has been, but she's been very well shielded. They're from a wealthy family. She's done well at school. She's got the career that she wants. And so life has been very smooth and very perfect until she's 28, and then she faces an issue that won't go away.
And as this issue kind of comes up, her faith really gets called into question, doesn't it? She starts questioning where God is when life isn't perfect.
Yes, because a whole foundation has been based on a wrong assumption. So when life suddenly is no longer perfect, and she initially thinks, "Oh, it'll all work out. It's just a temporary test from God to test my faith." But when it doesn't, what does that mean? Has she failed God? Has she sinned? I mean, all of these explanations come up. And yeah, she's got to re-sort her whole faith from the beginning.
It's, I really am enjoying and have enjoyed reading the book. I think it's, you really bring her character to life and we get quite caught up in the story. And through it all, there is this, I guess, gentle teaching of theology, and particularly the prosperity gospel gets brought up in it. And the teaching there. Have you had, how did that kind of come about in the idea of the book? Have you had experience with that? You know, are you able to explain a little bit more about that?
I haven't read, before this year, I hadn't read a huge amount of Christian fiction, but the Christian fiction that I read and the stuff that I liked all dealt with issues. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to write something that I hoped would have an eternal value, but also dealt with an issue that comes up in discipleship. So it comes up in Taiwan quite often. Okay. People, because of their idol worship, really you worship an idol because of what he gives you. And if he stops giving you blessing, then you just switch gods. So they bring that idea into Christianity because they've been told God's even more powerful. And it's very easy then to assume that he's going to be even better and give even more blessings. And we sort of define in our own heads what the blessings are. So it's come up a lot in discipleship. Mm-hmm. It's come up almost anywhere I've ever discipled anyone. I mean, it's deep in our hearts that God ought to be making life smooth for us. And even if we don't say that, we believe it deep in our hearts, because when life does go wrong, or, you know, everyone else seems to be blessed, but we're not. Like, is it Psalm 73, that concept, you know, the rich seem to be blessed and all of these. And we can envy them and begin to wonder, what have I done wrong to not have what everyone else has? So it's a very prevalent idea, really.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I even find in my own life that life might be going along well, and then you'll have a trial or a hiccup will come along and you'll start to say, God, where are you in this? And it's really made me, I think, stop and adjust and realize, actually, am I treating God more as a Santa Claus who I'm presenting my request to and expecting him to bow to my whim instead of me bowing to what he has in store for me?
Yeah.
And I really found that encouraging as I was reading. And I think through stories, you really, as I said, get caught up in the characters, and yet there's a deeper level of meaning here that you are communicating. And that is something that you're quite passionate about. You've written a previous book, a non-fiction one, on telling the gospel through story. So are you able to tell us more about this role of stories in your life and how that impacts you and others as God reaches them?
I think particularly as a teenager, I remember reading a lot of Christian biographies and missionary biographies, and a lot of those stories had a huge impact on me. So I'm always asking people for their story. Mm-hmm. And about in 2004, we had a missionary trainer come from North Thailand and talk about Bible storytelling as a way of sharing the gospel and as teaching in the church. And I really listened to him, and I actually dismissed him. And I thought, you know, it's not my style. Will adults listen to stories? So I wasn't very interested. But again, I got that internal pressure. You just learn a story. And so eventually I was forced to learn a story. And my first experience of telling it in a really busy shop was so powerful, that the response of the non-Christian, they basically said to me at the end, they remembered what I'd said, they interacted, and then they said, well, what's the next story? And suddenly I had non-Christians asking me to share the gospel with them, instead of, you know, a very long process of raising the topic. Mm-hmm. And so really that lady forced me to learn a whole set of stories, and the more I did it and the more I shared it, the more excited I got about it. So I've been storytelling constantly since 2004, and after a time, it just sort of that idea that God had put in my heart to write a novel, it made sense as a Bible storyteller that actually there's another channel that you can write fiction. It's another channel to challenge people, inspire people.
And in the book, Grace in Strange Disguise, the character Esther starts learning some of this. She comes in contact with a woman who has learnt stories of the Bible. She goes through a process how to memorise these passages. Is that something that you encourage in people?
They're not particularly memorised. They're practised and practised till they're in your memory, but they're not memorised line by line. So it's not like memorising a Bible verse, but actually every sentence, the idea is there.
Okay.
So whether you say Adam and Eve were naked or Adam and Eve didn't have clothes on, weren't wearing clothes, that's okay, either one of those, depending on who the listener is. But, yeah, it's practised over and over. So that's really what Esther begins to experience, because that's the way that she's taught in the story. Then she begins to try that with other people.
And you kind of explain it in the book as laying the foundation, laying the building blocks for us to be able to then draw those from our memory.
Very much so. So it's a huge benefit to the storyteller as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some, like the Genesis 3 story, I've probably told 3,000 or 4,000 times. Wow. But I'm still noticing new things. It's just something amazing about God's word that you will benefit and keep benefiting. You never reach the end of it, the depth of it. So, yeah, it's a wonderful way to grow your own spiritual life, but also a very easy way to share with others.
Wow. And as you go around and tell stories, how do you find, like I feel like often people say, oh, as soon as people find out it's a Bible story, they switch off or... you know, have you found that to be the case, or how do you kind of disagree with that? What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I try and raise it in a way that starts by intriguing them. So I will often just tell people I'm a storyteller. I don't say on my first sentence that I'm a Bible storyteller. I say a storyteller, and then it's very easy for them to say, well, what kind of story? And then I'll say historical stories.
Okay.
What kind of historical stories? Well, Jewish historical stories and so on. So that they're interacting with you and discovering that you've got a sense of humor and you're interesting before they actually discover it's a Bible story. Mm. Yeah, I find that works best with Australians.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things about having it in the novel, is that you can model. I really wanted to model good evangelism. In anything I wrote for fiction, because in a lot of Christian novels, it's either they sort of dump it in there and it's very unnatural, or it's not there at all, or it's so vague that you couldn't get it. So I wanted it as natural as possible, just real conversations that I have.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that really captured me as I read it, was that, you know, I've had those same experiences as you read Christian fiction, that weaving in the biblical components are often done in a way that's just like a chunk of that's not organically woven into the story, and it kind of makes you feel a bit slapped across the face, like this is a story that I'm reading and relaxing as I'm reading it, and then here's this kind of chunk that doesn't fit anywhere but that they've put in. What was your process in writing? How did that come about for this? You said it was a shift from nonfiction to fiction for you for this book. And I see that it's going to be a series. Is that right?
It is now.
Yeah.
That's fairly new too. Well, I said I had two ideas initially. So the ideas that I was given was a basic title, a basic main idea, and a setting. So I just, for 6 years, really just said, Lord, if that's you make it come about. And just the idea, the story sort of grew in my head. Mm-hmm. So then I worked out using the internet what was a good way to structure it. I used something called the snowflake method, which is just starting with a one-liner and then expanding it out, and wrote something down and then let people read it and they said, well, this isn't working, or, oh, we need another character like this. So, you know, sometimes I invented characters to flesh things out, and just lots, probably 30 or 40 edits or more, growing and changing, and then just learning how to write. There was a lot of stuff where I would have to read a book on how to write something, and that would help. And then eventually getting professional editing. I had two different editors, very different, but really, really helpful. And they had courage. The first one really, they're both an Australian and a New Zealander. The first one just said, when I first sent it to her, it's not ready for me yet. And she gave me sort of three pages of what still needed to be done, which was very discouraging. But a great day when she said it's ready.
Right.
And, yeah, she really taught me a lot about interviewing the characters as though they were real people and interview them when they're 10, 15, 20, whatever. So that she gave lots of great advice.
You then went on, you submitted it in a few competitions. Was that part of the editing process?
Well, you really, yeah, you submit to competitions because most of them will give feedback. In fact, that's the kind of competitions you submit to. So early on, I actually got a second place, and that at the stage that I was at, I was really saying, God, is this really you? So that was a confirmation to me, and it also gave me some money to pay the editors.
Yeah.
And then later I submitted to quite a few and never got anywhere, but each time they gave me feedback, some of it helpful and some not so helpful.
Mm. Yeah. And then you went on the journey of self-publishing for this book. Previous work, you've been published by InterVarsity Press for Telling the Gospel Through Story. So you've done sort of the more traditional route, and now you've done self-publishing. How's that been?
At the beginning, it is an enormous, enormous amount of learning because you have to educate yourself in business, in marketing, in writing. I mean, you have to do or find someone to do every aspect, the cover design, the interior design, the editing. So it's a huge amount of work. But now that I've done it, there are some huge advantages to it. So one of the advantages is if I meet someone, I can give them a copy of my book now for free. Mm-hmm. If someone wants to translate it, I can just say yes, pray about it and say yes. Whereas when it has to go through a publisher, just a much slower process. And if I don't want to make any money at all and just give the whole thing away, I can do that. And I can move the price up and down. There's just many, many excellent things about it. But it isn't for the faint-hearted. It's a big learning curve.
And so whereabouts can people get it? Where is stocking it? Is it it's available in ebook?
Yes, so on all the ebook platforms, so Amazon and Kobo, iBooks, these kind of places. It's also available in Australia through The Wandering Bookseller, based out of Katoomba, and through Booktopia. And hopefully Coorong will eventually stock it, but you can buy print copies through Amazon's company CreateSpace, which is in the UK and US is cheaper. And then the easiest way to get print books in Australia, I think, is through Wandering Bookseller or Booktopia.
And what's next for you?
Yes, so with self-publishing, they recommend I really need to try and get the book two of the series out a year from the first one.
Okay.
I mean, if I could get it out earlier, that would be great, but I actually have plenty of other things to do. So a year, I think, is possible. Anything shorter probably isn't. So at the moment, it looks like it's going to be a trilogy. It was only in May that the editor that I was using said, I think this is 1.5 books, not one. Which was really late in the game for me. So I had to pray hard about it and then just cut off the last third of the book and then had to write a new conclusion. So it was quite a huge change in my mind. But I'm glad it was the right decision, but it was a bit hard at the time.
So
just steadily working on that. And I've also just put out another nonfiction on storytelling called Stories Aren't Just for Kids, Busting 10 Myths About Bible Storytelling. And that one's more a booklet, and it's free on everything but Amazon. So it's just an ebook.
Okay.
designed to sort of get Christians at least understanding what this storytelling thing is before they start on it.
In the close future, you're coming back to Australia in the next month or two?
I'm just coming home for a holiday. My parents are getting older. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to, there's a Christian Writers Conference called the Mega Christian Writers Conference that happens the last weekend in October. So I'm going to meet all the people I've met online and have been so helpful, and it'd be just lovely to meet so many of them and to hang out with Aussie and Kiwi Christian writers. And then I've also got the book launch for the novel at Pennant Hills Baptist in Sydney on 18th of November, Saturday, 2 to 4pm. So anyone's welcome to come to that.
Wonderful. And a question I always ask people is, how do you pursue God practically? So for yourself, what does your day look like? How does God kind of have time in that?
How I do prayer and Bible study changes quite a bit, but at the moment my best time of the week is actually when I go cycling. I do a 50K cycle, and I actually have a place where I can pray out loud, and I'm finding that praying out loud helps me concentrate. So my best prayer time of the week is that day. And if I get a really solid prayer time that day, it helps me want to pray the rest of the week. But I also try and pray with everybody that I talk to, Christian, you know, pray for non-Christians or pray with people I'm discipling, as well as the personal prayer and Bible study.
Have you got any resources at the moment, or any books or anything that you're just really enjoying that are feeding you?
I've just started watching, I think it's the Bible Project, those little videos about each book of the Bible.
Oh, yes.
So I've listened to the one on Habakkuk and the one on Joel, and I listen to it, and then I go and read the book several times, you know, each day for several days, and I'm liking that. Mm-hmm. I find just learning new Bible stories really, really stimulating. So that's another thing. And now that I'm going on holidays, I like to have a project, so I'll probably choose a Bible character or a book and really dig into that while I'm on holidays.
Oh, wonderful. For our listeners who are wanting to find you online, are you able to tell us where that could happen?
Okay, so I have a website called storytellerchristine.com. So that really is the center. And then Facebook, I have a public author page under my name, Christine Dillon Author, I think. But I've also got a private one which you can ask to join, Storyteller Christine, and you can ask permission to join that. And then I've also got storytelling side of my life in terms of Bible storytelling. So there's storyingthescriptures.com, and then there's Storying the Scriptures on Facebook.
Beautiful.
And then Pinterest, and you know, but that's, I'm limiting it to that at the moment. That's as much as I can manage.
Yeah, particularly with all this writing, you've got a lot on your plate. I think you're amazing. And I wanted to thank you as a reader for the time that you're putting into doing this, because it really has been such an encouragement, and it's come into conversation with people just when they've been asking what I'm up to, and I'm talking to them about your book, Grace in Strange Disguise. So make sure that you go out there and grab a copy. I highly recommend it. I'd like to thank you, Christine, for being on the show today, for giving up some time, particularly just before you head away on holidays. I know it's always a bit crazy. So thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's a privilege. Thank you, Emily.
You have been listening to the Pursuits of God podcast. For information about our episodes and for detailed show notes, please go to pursuitsofgod.com/podcast.